Earlier this summer, I hosted a five-day virtual summit that was about navigating the future of entertainment. And I had some of the most amazing conversations with some of the most brilliant minds that I've ever met in my 10-plus years of podcasting. Now, when it comes to navigating our uncertain future as artists, as creatives, and storytellers, I do not pretend to have all the answers, and frankly, I'm not sure I have any of them. But what I can promise is that few are working hard to try and figure out where we are going next and how it is that we stay relevant while also staying sane. The following is my summit interview with motion graphics artist, animator, and agency owner Kalika Sharma. And we talk all about the more personal side of navigating career pivots and dealing with career uncertainty.
I got to ask you, Zach, what are we going to talk about today?
That's a really good question, Kalika. The short answer is I'm not quite sure. We're going to be winging this one a little bit more than usual. For those of you that have been with us for all 5 days of the summit, you've been bombarded with all kinds of information, ideas, mindset shifts, strategies, next steps. Today's going to be a little bit different. Today's going to be a little bit more on the personal side and kind of show some of the work that we do inside the Arnold Academy, where you and I are both kind of experiencing our existential crises together. You and I are both going through the messy middle of career transitions. We were both, by certain definitions, could say that we had very successful careers in our various areas. And now the world is kind of, you know, crumbled underneath our feet. We're trying to figure out what is our new identity in the world? What direction do we want to go forwards? How can we be valuable? How can we generate income? And just how the hell do we survive the messy middle being in the sandwich generation? We've got kids that are growing up. We've got parents that need elder care and otherwise. So today's conversation is going to be just a little bit different than all the other conversations we've had for the summit so far. So needless to say, Kalika, it is both a pleasure to have you here today, and I want to thank you in advance for knowing the vulnerability and the openness and the honesty that you're going to bring to today's conversation, which is exactly why I invited you.
I can't promise tears, but I'll do the best I can in terms of being as open and honest as possible about anything you have questions about, Zach.
Yeah, well, if memory serves, you've been a member of my community, I think at least 2 or 3 years now. One of those people that just pleasantly showed up in my inbox and showed up to a Zoom call. Oh, here's another student. And you've really kind of ingratiated yourself in this community as almost like a den mother, a teacher. Like, you are the perfect example of somebody that just comes into a community and says, how can I be helpful? I love finding the people that consider themselves the helpers, because right now, more than ever, we need to find the helpers. It's one of my favorite Mr. Rogers quotes. You are definitely one of those helpers. But what I also love, you always challenge me. I have some idea. I have some thought, some tactic or strategy. You're like, yeah, I don't know. What about this thing? So I'm looking forward to maybe you even challenging some of my assumptions and questions today. So I think this will be a fun one.
It always is.
So given that, I know a lot about you and I know a lot about your background. But for those that are coming to this fresh, which I would presume is just about everybody that's listening to this outside of these students in our community, give us the 2-minute download on the background or the origin story of Kalika up until the messy middle.
Okay. Well, I started off in the 90s studying animation at an art school. I went to the Rhode Island School of Design and I studied how to make animation and film and video using analog equipment. So I was filming my senior thesis film on a 16 millimeter Oxberry animation stand that didn't even have a motorized zoom. So that was really interesting. And I did work directly under the camera. I did some documentary stuff. I did some narrative stuff. And then I learned a little bit of Adobe programs, just enough to be able to apply to Nickelodeon and get rejected. They had come to my school to recruit and they looked at my portfolio and they said, nope. And some other people I knew got interviews, but I wasn't going to give up because I really wanted to work for Nickelodeon. So I got a portfolio review from them, then followed up with a phone call, said, hey, I'm really excited about the changes I was able to make to my portfolio based on your feedback. I'd love to show it to you. And this was when email was not really a thing. So I called them on phone and we had this conversation basically. And I came to New York for from Rhode Island and showed them what I did with my portfolio, got the job at Nickelodeon. I animated there for 2.5 years as those two guys on In Living Color would say, hated it. I really thought that I was going to love it. Like the whole time I was in college, I was like, I'm going to be a preschool animator. This can kick ass. I'm going to be so happy. I hated it. It was just the same existential crisis every single week for this same character and his family. And I just could not get into it. My friends, on the other hand, loved it and they were really into it. And I just could not get my brain around it. And I think what it was is that I have a very short attention span and we were working with the same character for 2.5 years. And that's when I knew I needed to go into commercials instead. So when the show ended, we all dispersed. I started working in educational graphics. It wasn't very sexy, but I, you know, got the job done. I started doing some stuff for Sesame Street. That was really fun. Some short animations for Elmo's World for the program itself. And then I went to grad school, learned some visual effects stuff, learned some actual motion graphics, graduated from NYU with a degree in advanced digital applications, and then ended up working in commercials. So I did projects for Steve Madden. I did a bunch of other, like, you know, small projects here and there, like, and it was fun because it was like every 6 to 8 weeks, it was a new project and it was fantastic. And then I was kind of going through all of this and I met my husband, got married, got pregnant. I got sent to the iHeartRadio Music Festival, the first one at in Las Vegas to supervise all of the iHeartRadio branded graphics there. That was incredible. And I was really able to make a difference because the graphics weren't right and they needed to all get redone. And all of the graphics artists who had been hired to do the project, God bless them, they were really young. And when they handed in the work, they thought they were finished. So they went out and they partied and they didn't wait for the confirm that everything worked. And meanwhile, we get all the graphics, they're not quite right. And so these guys who worked on the iHeartRadio graphics, stoned off their asses, could not make the changes that we needed, had to like regroup, hire new artists, revise all the graphics, redeliver all the graphics. I kind of saved the day. It was such a rush. Oh, and I was also 6 months pregnant at this time with my twins.
I'm surprised the graphics didn't get better because of that, or more interesting at least.
Well, the experience was certainly interesting. And the guys I was working with were just like, whoa, dude, when you were taking a nap, your stomach was moving. And so it was an adventure. And, you know, I continued to do lots of like commercial stuff. You know, after that, I had my kids. I worked on projects for Carnegie Hall. I worked as a software trainer, always using Adobe, doing video editing, motion graphics, 2D character animation. Did a big project for United Way of New York City, which paved the way for me to get a massive contract with Marriott Bonvoy, where we did about 30 videos fully animated for a web series they were doing. It was just incredible. Everything was going great until about 2023. And in 2023, like toward the end, you're finishing up Marriott Bonvoy, things started to slow down. And last year, it was getting projects was like pulling teeth. And this year is even worse. And I'm very fortunate in that from day one, when I met my husband, he and I really aligned in terms of our values that we didn't need a lot of money. It was more important for us to have time together. And that even if we were earning a decent amount, we're still going to be really frugal. We're still going to, for example, never go out to breakfast if we could help it because we could make a better breakfast at home for much cheaper. Or, you know, not going to really fancy restaurants that often, partially because we just don't enjoy them. You know, so finding those hole in the walls with like great food that was made by somebody's grandma from Vietnam. You know, those were our favorite restaurants and they also aligned with our spending habits. And so Fortunately, we were able to save a decent nest egg, and we bought a house in 2019, right before the pandemic hit. Like, we closed on Halloween of 2019, and by the following year, our house had appreciated 50%, and it's just gone up since then. Yeah, our realtor was calling us and just being like, hey, so your house has appreciated a lot. Like, you guys ever thought about selling? I'm like, where are we going to go? Like,
we're unpacking.
Yeah, like, we've been here 6 months, lady. Like, really? You're asking us if we want to sell? So, yeah, I mean, we could, if we needed to, sell our house, move to, I don't know, Costa Rica, Vietnam, India, insert name of cheaper country here, and make it work. But I still really love what I do. And that's the problem. You know, I still love teaching, and I teach at NYU. I'm an adjunct. I teach 4 classes a year. It's a living wage, but it's not enough to cover what I want to achieve. And it's not enough to cover what I want to save for in my future. And I haven't hit 50 yet. I'm turning 48 this year.
That cannot possibly be true. There's
no way. It's so true. It's crazy. It, like, it snuck up on me, and I blame the children because the children are now 13, and I can't believe that they're, like, taller than me. It's so,
I've trusted everything you've ever told me up until now. You're going to have to show me a driver's license because you've clearly taken very good care of yourself.
It's not me. My husband has taken very good care of me, and he takes on all the stress. I have very normal, what's it called? Blood pressure. Yeah. My blood pressure is totally fine. I don't color my hair. He's gone gray, like in, you know, a decent amount. He has to color his hair. So
I just said, you know what? I'm going to accept that. It just, these are going to be like the, these are, you know, my aging spots. Like, yep, this is me aging. When I, when we had our most recent town hall conversation earlier this morning, several students that had not seen me in a while, like, hey, love the beard. I'm like, basically the way that I see it is very similar to, without going too much on a tangent, I grew up in an Amish community, not part of an Amish community, but surrounded by an Amish community. Sure. We even had an Amish family living on our land and helping on our farm. So Amish community is almost like family to us.
Yeah.
And in the Amish community, it's traditional that all of the men, that if they're clean shaven, they're not married. As soon as they get married, then they let their beards grow up. So the way that I see it, not because it's about being married, but basically this is the signifier that I'm on the other end of a midlife crisis. Pre-midlife crisis, clean shaven. Post-midlife crisis, I just stopped caring. Like, this is just me saying I've given up. I just, you know, we'll shave it and, you know, do whatever I need to every once in a while. But I'm like, yeah, this is the, I've surpassed the I've given up on trying stage. So,
sure.
Anyway, one of the details that I think is really important about your origin story that's going to bring us to the messy middle, which is really the crux of today's conversation, is that I want to go a little bit deeper into the fact that you're not just a teacher, you're not just a designer or an animator. You built out your own agency. So you built your own company and you manage a team. So tell us a little bit more about that, because I think that's a really important component of where you're stuck in the messy middle right now.
Okay. So I officially started my company in 2003, and it was a sole proprietorship. And it was always like Kalika and friends, or Kalika and friend, or just me. And I would use it sort of as a way of not having to just put my name out there, and also to be able to command project rates rather than hourly freelance rates. So it was nice that way. And I would always try to get my friends involved in projects, especially if I knew that the project would be better for their contribution. And in 2021, at the tail end of 2021, I was approached to do the project for Marriott Bonvoy, and I knew I was going to need help. And so in May, one of my colleagues from NYU, she approached me and she said, you know, you're getting ready to do this project for Marriott Bonvoy. I have this student, Joanna. She is amazing. She's Hungarian born of Chinese immigrant parents. She's here on a student visa. If you need a storyboard artist, I would recommend hiring her and hiring her soon, because she needs someone to sponsor her for her OPT visa, at least for the next 18 months or whatever. I said, yeah, okay, I'll meet her. And she was incredible. I loved talking with her. She had all this filmmaking experience. I immediately hired her on as an art production, editing, animation, storyboard assistant, like assistant of all the things. And just incredibly detail-oriented, organized, was able to take the spaghetti that is my brain and put it into neat rows of what needs to get accomplished, and helped me prioritize all of that. And then after having Joanna work with me for a couple of months, finally the ink got dry on the contract. I had to hire a whole bunch of people. At one point on the Marriott Bonvoy project, we had 15 people working with me. And then that has sort of ebbed and flowed, and it goes between our core team of three, which is me, Joanna, and Emily, who's our art director and producer, who is an absolute dream to work with. Genius at both art direction and producing in equal measure. And she was recommended to me by another freelancer, matter of fact, who just kept bugging me. She kept saying, have you called Emily yet? She's really great. You're going to like her. We need to call her. Why haven't you called her yet? I talked to Emily. She said you didn't call. I'm like, I'm busy. She's like, that's exactly why you should call Emily. Emily will help you. And Emily started as a motion designer for me, and I saw something in her, and I, you know, brought her into the fold, and she's production managing, art directing, and now she's like a fixture. She does art direction and producing for me regularly whenever we have a project. And even when we have internal projects, like our YouTube channel, which is just getting off the ground now. But I love working with these people. This is how I operate now. And they rely on me as the source of their income and their sort of reason for working. And I feel incredibly fortunate that I've been able to keep them as long as I have been. But there is no work over here. And while it's not my fault, it is my responsibility, as we've talked about, and I need to figure out what I'm doing next.
So I would imagine that that's a pretty heavy burden to carry. And you know what? I don't have to imagine it, because I know exactly how it feels, because similar to you, similar trajectory over the last few years, went from being a technician for all intents and purposes, where I had one job. I was an editor. I did film and television. I was a widget in a machine. Mm-hmm. Then I decided that I wanted to build my own educational platform, launched a podcast, launched a career coaching program, now have the Arnold Academy. Can't do that by yourself. Slowly started to build a team and bring people in, many of whom were actually former students and are still current students.
Yeah.
And the burden that's the heaviest is not even so much the burden of, I'm not sure where the next job is coming in. I'm not sure that I can sustain the income, et cetera, et cetera. The burden for me is I cannot bear the thought of having to tell my team I can no longer employ you. Like that's a really hard burden for me. And I would imagine I'm not alone in that.
No, not at all. When I had to change Emily back to contract, I almost started crying. I was so upset. But my accountant had advised that since I couldn't guarantee that she would be payroll for all of 2025, that I shift her down to contract. And now I feel like I'm hiring her the bare minimum that I can in good conscience. And I've been, you know, recommending her to pretty much every friend I have. Oh, you have work? Do you need somebody to help you organize your production? Do you have someone who can help make sure that all of your freelancers are doing what they need? I sound like a salesperson, but, you know, I want to make sure that she has work because she doesn't have something steady. She doesn't have a nest egg like I do. She's like over 10 years younger than I am. And the same thing with Joanne.
Unfortunately, this is not the only burden that you and I carry. So let's dig a little bit deeper into the epicenter of what we're calling the messy middle. What are just a few of the things that are defining the messy middle that is the quagmire of the shitstorm that is your life right now?
I have two teenage children, and one of them does not like school. And at a certain point, she really wanted to do what I do. She loves to draw. She's very artistic. She's, I would say, almost pathologically creative. And I've had to encourage her to broaden her horizons and consider something else. And that, to me, was pretty heartbreaking. It was, okay, mommy's having a hard time right now. You sure you want to do this? Is there anything else you could do? Is there anything else you're interested in? She needs my time right now. She doesn't need anything else. She just needs me to be there for her. So for me to say, you know what? Forget this whole self-employed agency owner thing. I'm going to go and work for a company. That would mean sacrificing my time freedom to spend time with her, to go over her homework with her, to make sure that she's not imploding because school is so hard for her, right? Because she doesn't like it. My son, on the other hand, enjoys school, but then he has some issues with socializing and he has addictive tendencies and he has obsessive tendencies. And I want to make sure that neither of them is going to develop some sort of a self-harm situation or an eating disorder or any of those other things that kids who are in the teenage years are susceptible to. I'm also married and I love my husband and I love spending time with him. And as I navigate this messy middle, I find that I have less and less time to spend with him. And that breaks my heart because I was supposed to build something for all of us. And I feel like I'm failing all of them. And then on top of that, my parents are aging. They don't live super close, but my parents only have my sister and me. My sister lives 5.5 hours west of them, and we live 3.5 hours if we drive when the stars align perfectly in the middle of the night from them on the east side. So we try to visit them whenever possible, but we found out fairly recently that one of my parents was experiencing dementia, and we noticed it and they were fighting us. And then we got them to a geriatrician. We agreed to go to the geriatrician, and there's a cognitive ability test. And out of, let's say, 33 points, they scored 11. Mm-hmm. And they're hippocampus, they scanned their brains, did an MRI. The hippocampus was first percentile for their age. And the hippocampus is the signifier, the size of the hippocampus is the signifier for Alzheimer's. So I have a parent with Alzheimer's, and my parents don't want to leave their house. They're obsessed with their house. They love their time together. They don't even like going on vacation with us. They just like going by themselves. So it's a distinct possibility that one or both of them will need our care. They're in their 80s. It's just a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah, a lot is an understatement. And without going too deep into my own personal story, as you know, because you've been living through it as has the rest of the community, but over the last 2 years, watched both of my parents fall to dementia simultaneously at the exact same time, went through all the same things that you did, where they were absolutely convinced nothing was wrong. They thought they could take care of each other. We are going to die in this house. Like, you're going to mm-hmm. take this house from our cold, dead hands. No awareness whatsoever of their condition, to the point where we did a home visit because, like, the sheriff was coming in to do a home visit because they weren't checking their mail. And it was It's indescribable. I wasn't actually there in person, but my brother told me about it. It's the kind of stuff that you, like, you know, hear these horror stories with hoarders, and like, it's so they were clearly not within their right minds and had to basically drop everything in my life to transition them alongside my siblings, to put them in a memory care facility, all at the same time that the industry is imploding, not knowing what work is coming next. You know, the business that I was building is shrinking. Also have two teenagers at the same time. And it's just, it's an overwhelming amount of grief. And a lot of it doesn't even seem like grief, because there's this acceptable form of grief. Oh, sure. You know, somebody in your family has passed, or a friend has passed, or a pet has passed. Like, we allow people the space to grieve for those things. But we would never allow somebody the space to grieve for losing a job or losing a career path. Or like when somebody talks about losing their parents to dementia, it's very different than they've actually passed. But one, and I'm on the tail end of this, but you watch them disappear in front of your eyes. So my father, unfortunately, he did finally pass last summer, but my mother is still with us, but she's not my mom. Like, yeah, she's got a similar tone of voice, but it's not any of the same conversations. And if it's just that, like the sense of identity that these are my parents, if there's one place that I can go to have a conversation, tell them what's wrong with the world, tell them all, share all of my successes, that disappears. There's grief in that. But then all of a sudden, all that you know about yourself, your job title, your career path, your accolades, the security that comes with, I always know this thing is there when I need it. Yoink, that's gone.
Yeah.
Then the relationship with your children changes. Like, it's just, it's so many things that are happening at once. And for me, it took 2 years to process the immense amount of grief. And underneath that grief was a lot of anger too. So I don't know if you have experienced any or all of that, but I would presume I'm not the only one that's going through this in this messy middle.
Messy, it sure is. I think for me, it's a lot of grief. I haven't found the anger yet. I've never experienced anything like this in my career. When my husband and I first got together, he was fascinated by the fact that I was a freelancer, that I was a free agent, that I could take whatever projects I wanted to. And he certainly saw me take projects sometimes because they just landed in my lap and they turned out for the best sometimes, and a few times they turned out for the worst. And he was always super supportive. And whenever work would dry up, he would say, well, if you told anybody that things are slow right now, all right, well, why don't you send out a few emails? All right. And I'd send out 5 emails. I'd get 3 inquiries and a booking. The next booking would last me another 3 months. Or I'd send out 10 emails and I'd get 3 and then 1. You know, that was ever the most I had to send. And it's just exponentially worse now. I'm sending out sometimes like 50 emails. And out of those 50, 4 people respond at all. And I mean, everyone's so inundated with data and messaging and all of this that sometimes I'm following up with people 4 and 5 times before they'll respond at all. And that gets really exhausting. And it's starting to feel like it's not going to get better.
You and I have had many a hot seat where we have talked about outreach. We've talked about relationship building. And one thing specifically that we've really worked on is shifting the mindset from what you call like your inner salesperson, Kalika. And I believe you even mentioned that since we've worked together now, she's like changed to a radiator in the basement. Mm-hmm. Not my analogy, yours. But I really feel like you're doing everything right in building these relationships, but it is so frustrating to reach out, to get really enthusiastic responses, and for everybody to say the same thing. We'd love to work with you. there's no work right now. There are just no opportunities, and it's just mm-hmm. happening across the board. So as you know, in our community, you're a little bit of an outlier in that we don't have a ton of designers and motion graphics, animators, and people that are agency owners yet. I'm really hoping to fix that. As I've been saying for 2 years, I want to bring in about 1,000 more Kalikas. But at the end of the day, you're a little bit of an outlier in that a lot of the people that are in this community are very much in the entertainment industry doing different creative crafts. But you found that all of the challenges that you're dealing with in a very different industry with very different clientele, it's the same conversation with everybody over and over and over. And sometimes I find there's value in nothing more than just knowing all of us are going through it. Just had this conversation this morning when we had our latest Arnold Academy town hall. And there were multiple people that said, I keep blaming myself. I feel like there's something wrong with me. I'm doing something wrong. My work isn't good enough. My outreach emails aren't good enough. My resume isn't good enough to get through all the AI bots on LinkedIn. It's really hard to just not start saying it's never going to get any better and it's got to be my fault. I must be doing something wrong. And I know that you've fallen into that trap more than once.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, how many times have I come to you and just said, what I'm doing isn't working? What do I do with myself? Do I completely change gears? You know, you keep saying, keep doing what you're doing, but sometimes it really feels futile. Like I just don't know what to do next sometimes. At the moment, building out my YouTube channel, and, you know, people have told me like, hey, why don't you build it out live, like on LinkedIn, talk about how you're building this thing. And part of me feels like it could do that. It feels phony, you know? And as you know, I'm a very genuine person. I'm not going to do something just so people will pay attention. That shouldn't be the end goal. The end goal should always be to provide value. The end goal should always be to help people. As my son used to say when he was little, I'm a help one. And that's what I like to think of myself as. I'm a help one. And if I am not helping, like, what am I doing? You know, that's so ingrained in my identity.
I would say that's a great thing to have ingrained in your identity, because without getting political at all, I would argue a lot of the challenges we have in culture, society, the economy, and otherwise are people that don't identify as the help ones, that don't see themselves as being service oriented. And I want to bring value to others and make their lives better. It's very much the opposite. We'll stick a pin in that, probably not worth going in that direction, but I just wanted to say that that value is so important. And I think you having that as a value is what will serve you going forwards. And what I want to talk about with you now, because it's very central to the core narrative of this entire 5-day summit, is I really believe genuinely, and I don't know exactly what it looks like yet, but I really believe the future of entertainment, the future of content creation is bringing the best of the creative world in this one Venn diagram over here, what many are calling Legacy Hollywood. The first time I was called Legacy Hollywood, it's like, oh, geez. Here, you can have your knife back. I'm like, dear Lord, I feel like I'm 100, right? Uh-huh. But you've got Legacy Hollywood, one Venn diagram over here. Then you have the next gen content creators in the YouTube space. Sure. Our future is somewhere in the overlap of these two Venn diagrams. I genuinely believe that. And I don't think it's going to be this horrible, god-awful place of 30-second TikTok videos. I really believe the next generation of content creators really want to learn how to tell great stories. They just don't know how to tell great stories. But we, the creatives, we kind of suck at selling ourselves and building audiences and communicating the way that they communicate. I really think there's value in these two worlds coming together. So I wanted to talk a little bit more about you saying, well, I'm working on my YouTube. That's a really big shift from conversations that we've had over the last few months. So I want to talk about the genesis of where I want to put my attention right now is YouTube. Because with everything that's going on with you, with the situation with the parents, with the kids, with trying to figure out where is the next work coming from, I'm trying to keep a team going. You and I have talked multiple times where basically you come to the hot seat and say, I don't know what to talk about. Like, I don't know what I'm, let's just figure out what I'm supposed to be doing, which is a very common question. But now you seem more focused and intentional. You're still figuring it out, but it's not, well, I could be doing this, I could be doing this, I could be doing that. You're putting together a YouTube channel. Let's talk about what led you there, because it was a very value-driven and very focused approach to what you're doing next.
Okay. So the YouTube channel was something that I had started really around the pandemic, and I was doing these YouTube live streams, and they were basically me downloading my brain into other people. Like, okay, here's how you would make a project like this from the beginning. Here's your design. Here are your assets. Here's how you put together the design in Photoshop. Here's how you animate that in After Effects, that sort of a thing. And it didn't work well for me. Like, YouTube Live was not the format. I would get sick to my stomach every time I had to do it. I was a nervous wreck the whole day before it. And then after it was over, there was always, you know, there'd be maybe one or two people who would show up, no matter how much or how little I would advertise it. I never got more than like six people on the call, and I couldn't see their faces. And it was really hard for me to connect to an empty camera and a chat room. And I really started to think about, what I know, how well I know it, and how few people are able to explain what I do as well as I can. And that was the thing that I kept hearing from my students, was you're really good at explaining how to do the thing, at looking at something that exists, breaking it down into its components, and then making something that's inspired by that professional project. And additionally, my children have this tutor who's based in Ohio. She's 75 years old. She's been a tutor for 50 years for kids ages pre-K through college. And at one point, she started her own series of videos and cataloged her brain, essentially, everything she could teach from pre-K to 12th grade, into a series of 1,200 short videos ranging from 2 minutes to 20 minutes. Oh. And I thought that that was such a great idea, because she had such a wonderful way of communicating these concepts to people. And I recognized that, you know, other people think that about me in my area as well. And wouldn't it be nice to be able to just give people this? People have time right now. They don't have money. And why not help them make their LinkedIn photo look more attractive? Why not help them get ready for that sports graphics job that they're applying for that they have no idea how to do the graphics for, but they got an interview? All right, let me give them a leg up. Just really taking this idea of, let me help people. All right. Well, also making connections with local business owners here and talking to them and talking to my students and just saying, okay, well, we made this thing together. I didn't charge you for it. You didn't offer to pay. But wouldn't it be nice to have this not be a one-off? Have this be something that other people can learn from. So just starting that process of like, okay, let's turn this into a tutorial. Let's turn this into an opportunity to help people learn a new skill. Because my work spans a lot of different genres and different styles and different apps and different approaches. Always comes back to, what do you need in order to tell your story? But there's so many different ways to tell your story.
The story that I want to dig even deeper into now is one that you're very familiar with because you've gone through this portion of the program. But as you know, I have a course that's called Design Your Dream Career. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you know so much about it. You're literally the animator of all the Venn diagrams and the animations of all the various tornadoes and all the cool stuff. And you've also been a student through it. And mm-hmm. one of the key concepts that we talk about is figuring out what your asymmetric advantage is. Mm-hmm. This is something I want to emphasize. I don't really need to emphasize it to you anymore, but I need to emphasize it to everybody that is watching right now that is saying to themselves, I'm starting over. Nobody is starting over. We all have a lifetime of skills, expertise, knowledge, passions, hobbies, interests. All of us have something that makes us uniquely us, but it's the intersection of all those various Venn diagrams. When we connect all those dots that overlap in the middle is where I believe all of us have a unique asymmetric advantage. And it's about figuring out where that lies. And I think what you're talking about is that you have largely found that for yourself, which is you're really good at explaining complex ideas, specifically in the animation, motion graphics, design space. If there's one program that makes my head spin, it is After Effects. My brain breaks. Like, I've learned the basics. I understand layering. I understand keyframes. Talk to me about expressions or anything else. I'm like, nope, too much. My brain breaks. Like, I'm a very simple one video layer, a few audio layers. I'm just a simple editor caveman, right? Your world frightens and confuses me. But you're really good at piecing all of that together and teaching it. But you're also a really talented animator and motion graphics artist. You're also just in general a really good communicator. You're also somebody that wants to help others. And I would also say that even though maybe you don't quite see it yet, you're also very photogenic and have a really good way that you present yourself that feels very natural and very authentic. You take all those Venn diagrams, the center of that, the asymmetric advantage is potentially, like you said, downloading all of this knowledge that you have. Because a lot of other people out there probably know similar things to you when it comes to After Effects, layering, motion graphics, animation. I bet they can't teach it the way that you do. And I bet they can't teach it with the kind of heart that you do or the kind of presentation that you would do. So that's you uniquely putting yourself out there. And the reason that this to me is so important to talk about, and this is adjacent to a conversation that I had in one of our other summit interviews with Liz Kraft and Sarah Fain, who are both writers, showrunners, and hosts of the Happier in Hollywood podcast. And they were saying, well, we need to get on TikTok. And I pushed back on that. I said, nobody needs to get on TikTok. If you feel pulled to do TikTok and TikTok feels authentic to you, and also on the other end of your TikTok is an audience that you're going to resonate with, then yeah, absolutely dive into TikTok. But my biggest fear is that I'm going to be chasing all of these shiny objects. And eventually what happens is the algorithm decides who we are and who we become. And that's why I think it's so hard. Like for you at first, I remember just so much trepidation about, well, I guess I'm supposed to get on YouTube. I guess I need to figure this out. But once we cracked the code that was about you providing that service to teach these things, and then the other code that we cracked that I want you to talk a little bit more about because it's so tiny, but it's so important, it was you overcoming the barrier of, yeah, but I'm just talking to myself. So let's talk about some of these strategies and tactics that we've used to actually get you in front of a YouTube camera and, more importantly, do it being yourself.
Okay. So I feel a little awkward about talking about this because it's so fresh. I've only been doing this for a few weeks.
By the way, that's why we're talking about this now, because I wanted it fresh. I wanted it new. I don't like the whole shiny object. Look at somebody that's years past all of their success stories. I love talking to people in the messy middle because it's real. So don't shy away from the messiness of it all.
So basically what happened was I was talking to you, Zach, about how I hate doing YouTube Live and I hate recording myself for a pre-recorded YouTube because I'm so used to teaching people. I got my start teaching in 2005 at Pratt Institute. I was only 6 years out of college and people were mistaking me as a student. And I was teaching these kids how to use the Adobe programs, After Effects, Photoshop, Illustrator, to make animated films. And it was a rush, and I absolutely loved it. And it was a fluke that I got the job. It was like, you know, someone I had worked with barely saw this spark that, oh, maybe she'd be a good instructor, and we need an instructor right now. And I'm the department chair at Pratt Institute, so I'm giving her a call. And I love that energy that I get from teaching a live class. And it doesn't matter as much whether they're in person or whether they're virtual, but if they're virtual, I better see their faces. I want to see them laugh at my dumb jokes. I want to see that like spark when like I show them something cool that they didn't know about before. I want to hear them like go, oh, or like just like nod at me that they're understanding what I'm teaching. And so I was talking to you about how I missed that when I was recording for YouTube. And you said, well, you know, when I record all of my courses, I do it live. I have these courses that I have these workshops that I run, and no one's allowed to talk during the workshop. They can chat to me, but I can see them, and that energy really feeds me. The compromise is that the video quality isn't as sharp as if I was recording it 2K or whatever, but that energy makes up for it. And that I thought was a really good solve. So what I've started doing is every Tuesday and Thursday, more or less, I record at least one YouTube tutorial that lasts about a half an hour. And they're on whatever topic I feel like, and we'll roll them out in whatever order feels natural. If anyone has read or heard about Gretchen Rubin's The Four Tendencies, I am a rebel obliger. So I'll do whatever you want me to do, but I'm going to do it my way. And
just out of curiosity, shameless self-promotion, how in fact did you hear about Gretchen Rubin and her four tendencies?
Well, then I am glad you asked that question, Zach, because this wonderful mentor by the name of Zach Arnold introduced me to Gretchen Rubin and her four tendencies in Focus Yourself. And it was instrumental in understanding who I was and how I operated and how to sort of trick myself into doing the things that I needed to do.
Maybe not tricking yourself, but I do agree it's very much about personal awareness. And it's really about understanding, why do I react to things the way that I react to them? And more importantly, how do I react to and meet or not meet expectations? So I won't go deep into the tendencies. That's not what today is about. But I don't think it's so much about tricking yourself. It's about understanding yourself. When you think, oh, this is how I'm wired. This is why I don't go to the gym every morning. Or this is why I get so upset when somebody asks me to do this thing and I'm focusing. Whatever it is, of all the podcast interviews, of all the books, that one's easily in my top five of game changers and just better understanding both me and the people that I work with and the people that I live with. I remember seeing Gretchen Rubin speak on stage. It's the first time that I was introduced to her. 30 minutes into the conversation, I thought, oh my God, my marriage makes sense. Oh my God, it totally makes sense. Like, that's where it started. Like, I have to get her on the podcast. I read her book, consumed all of it.
Oh my gosh.
Just as a side note, for those that don't already know, Liz Craft, who is also a member of the summit, is Gretchen Rubin's sister. So it all comes together.
Oh, very cool.
But anyway, we went off on a tangent. I have a tendency to do that. Let's return back to where we were.
Okay. So this solution of recording the YouTube videos live is a game changer. And so I'll have maybe just like one or two people. And matter of fact, of all the communities I belong to, Zach, I get more people from the Arnold Academy than I do from other places. And I think part of that too is that the other communities I belong to, they already know how to do this stuff, right? Whereas being a little bit of an outlier in the Arnold community has allowed me to have a new audience to share this knowledge with. And some of them have no experience with these apps and they're coming in completely fresh. So they don't have to unlearn anything. And I'm like, oh, thank goodness. This is refreshing and really nice. And after the recording is over, I ask them, well, what did you think of this? Like, how did this sit for you? And it's really cool because I'm getting immediate feedback and it's very nourishing, because it encourages me to do the best that I can in the editing process for these YouTube videos so that they'll provide the most value to people, because they're already starting to, even in the raw form of recording them live.
I would imagine that there's also a pretty heavy dose of imposter syndrome that comes with this. I know that when I was first in the position where I thought, not even so much when I started the podcast, because the podcast, there was no plan whatsoever, was I'm going to talk to my friends about being healthy in the Yedepe and going hiking. Like, there was no plan. There was no monetization. There were no funnels. Took years for all that to develop. But as soon as I decided to take this seriously, the thought in my mind, or the two thoughts, were, who the hell do I think that I am to be doing this? And why would anybody come to me when there are other people that are talking about all the same things? So is there a part of you that's thinking, Why wouldn't people just go to LinkedIn Learning and do After Effects 101? Why do I need to be sharing things about After Effects or other programs on YouTube?
Okay. So one of the cool things about being a rebel obliger is that I really want to learn this particular thing, but I'm not just going to commit to one person to teach me it. So I'm learning from a lot of different people who do similar stuff. And one nugget of information that I got recently that's really stuck with me is, yes, there are absolutely probably hundreds of people who teach the same content that I am teaching or similar content. How are they teaching? You're the only one who has that unique voice. You're the only one who's going to describe it that way and combine it with describing that other thing that way that's so unique to you. And it's, you know, honestly, it's your brand voice, right? Yes, I am my own personal brand and I have a particular way that I talk to my students. And I've shared my my videos with some colleagues of mine. And sometimes I'll get pushback. They'll say, oh, I really would not say that line about Beyonce right there. I really would not say, like, make sure that you drop your files to the left. And I was like, but that's how you remember it. Everything you own is in a box to the left, like just like Beyonce. And, you know, this is how people remember things. And, you know, I get feedback from my former students on LinkedIn all the time that I still do what you taught me. I still remember that I have to hit the letter T for opacity in After Effects because it's T for opacity. You know, other instructors, they'll say, oh, it's T for transparency. And I'm like, no, T, opacity and transparency are opposites. Why would you say that? That is stupid. You know? And so I've come up with all these different ways for people to remember things that make sense for my brain and it makes sense for theirs too.
And like you said, it's so important when somebody wants to learn something new. It isn't just the message, it's the messenger. Mm. That's where it took me a while personally to kind of find what my own voice was. But I realized that at the end of the day, whatever it is that I teach, my goal is that I want to make sure that people are entertained and emotionally engaged in it. And it's really hard to teach Trello and make people feel something in the process. Somehow I figured it out because that's where I started years ago. Somebody had reached out and said, hey, I know that you're kind of the Trello guy in your industry. Do you want to try teaching a course for LinkedIn Learning? And I'm like, cool, I'll give it a try. I was in my divergent creativity period where I'm just kind of diverging, trying different things. And as I started going through it, I started to find my voice and making these stupid jokes. And a few times LinkedIn, the instructor was like, we want to kind of tone it down a little bit and be a little bit more straightforward. And I realized I was finding my voice and the corporate world was squelching it. And that's when I said, I'm going to do my own thing. So now I unabashedly warn everybody in any of my workshops, many dad jokes and bad Gen X references to come. And if you don't like them, you're probably not in the right place. As you know, in the Design Your Dream Career workshop, what I hit over and over and over again, and I'm sure I'm not the only one to use this analogy, but if we're navigating career transitions, we need to pivot. Now, everybody remembers that when we talk about career navigation, very, very similar. So it's not just the message, it's the messenger, and it's how you convey that message. One of the most important kind of game-changing sayings that I've heard recently about when we create media or content creation actually came from one of my previous summit guests, and I've not gotten this out of my head, and I've been repeating it over and over and over. Anybody that has not already listened to my conversation with Jay Klaus, stop what you're doing. Listen to my conversation with Jay Klaus. He put it into perfect perspective. He said that content creation is nothing more than the transfer of emotion. And if we can transfer emotion from the work that we're doing and how we feel about it, and we transfer that emotion to somebody else, that's why we choose the messengers. That's why we choose the films, the television shows, the TikTok influencers, the LinkedIn Learning instructors. And that's why I think it's so important that if we have to push ourselves to get in front of that camera, like, oh, time to make the donuts. Another Gen X reference, by the way. But if you just feel like you got to push yourself to do it, because everybody says that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to post on LinkedIn 3 times a day and you're supposed to make YouTube shorts. I've done all the things. None of it worked. And it probably would have worked if I had stuck with it, but I didn't want to stick with it because I felt like I was selling my creative soul. Mm-hmm. Then I discovered Substack and I said, oh my God, these are my people. This is my voice. This is all of the quiet introverts that never want to go anywhere. But when they speak in 2000 words at a time. These are my people. So now, other than just the constraints of hours in the day, there's always a thought in my mind of, oh, I cannot wait to write about this and share it or put it in a note, or I'm so excited about conversing with people. So if somebody says, yeah, but you need to be on TikTok, I'd say bullshit. I'm building a community where I want to build it. When you put right. that, when you put that authentic energy out there, it attracts similar energies in return. It's the sure. whole reason you and I are having this conversation today. I didn't mm-hmm. pull you off the street. Somewhere in some alternate universe of a forum, of a Facebook post, of a Slack conversation, whatever it is, you found some link to something that led you to me, but it wasn't the message. My guess is it was the messenger.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I liked the way you talked and you were funny. And this might be, I don't mean this to be like at all insulting, but I had a friend who I introduced your material to, and she said, you know, he's not handsome, but he's charming.
My mother would disagree with you, but I tend to agree.
She said, and you can tell that he got to where he is through being just incredibly smart and incredibly charming. And I was like, yeah, that's it. And when I shared your videos with my assistant, Joanna, she was like, oh my gosh, this guy's really funny. And Joanna's 25. I said, Joanna, if you were 45, you'd be hilarious.
All my jokes would make sense.
Exactly. But she still, like, she found you very, very funny. And that idea of the messenger conveying the emotion, I think is so, so important. Yeah. And so one thing that I've started doing, and this was something my dad did when he was a middle manager and improving his management skills, was he sent surveys out to his colleagues and to his coworkers and to his subordinates even about his management style. As a matter of fact, I started posting a survey to my former students, some of whom took my class, like 20 years ago. And the feedback that I'm getting is all about how I was able to transfer that spark that I have for animation and storytelling to them. And how once they caught that bug, they were hooked. They just could not stop doing what they were doing. And now, I mean, I look at them and I'm like, yeah, there's something to that. Mm-hmm.
And I think that spark that we found, like you said, it's very new. We're just barely planting the seed. We're beginning to water it. We're not seeing anything sprout yet. But I really think that the conversation we've had over the last few months to find this avenue. And right now, you too, you're in the divergent stage of creativity. I'm going to try this. I'm just going to make whatever video I want. Mm-hmm. Eventually, you'll start to converge on, you know what, maybe this is the focus. Maybe this is more specifically who I want to teach After Effects to, or these are the level of skills or whatever it might be. But right now, you're just throwing spaghetti against a digital wall. Mm-hmm. Which is fun. But eventually, I think you'll find that convergent point. But the most important thing is I believe we've connected you to that emotional spark. Oh, this is why I'm getting in front of my camera today on YouTube. Because until we have that, God, this is a slog. Even when you have it, this is a slog. Ask me how I know. But I've had people that have reached out and said, I've never had more fun learning productivity software. Mm-hmm. That's what I think I can uniquely bring. Where sure. I've always said that like my dream career is to be a stand-up motivator. Like public speaking combined with the most irreverent, god-awful stand-up comedy possible. And right now I'm more of a stand-up educator. But yeah, being a stand-up motivator is definitely on the bucket list. It's just going around and motivating and inspiring people, but you know, just like George Carlin style. That's the vision in my mind, speaking of connecting random dots. So here's where I want to leave us. This is an exercise that I don't always do at the end of my conversations, but I think it's going to be relatable now. Okay. Here's what I want to do. I want to do a little time traveling exercise. Mm. And the time traveling is actually going to be future Kalika is traveling back to today. So let's say future Kalika is give or take no more than 5 years out.
Okay.
Given all the things that have happened in the next 5 years in your life, what's future Kalika telling you about right now?
I think she's going to tell me you're doing the right thing. Keep giving. Don't hold back. Let your freak flag fly and have fun while you do it. And that fun is going to transmit, and that fun is going to impact people and inspire people to learn the way that you've learned. I learned everything traditionally, right? And I'm talking to students who are so obsessed with 3D and artificial intelligence that they just want everything to be automatic. I had a student tell me that he wanted to learn traditional and 3D animation in 2 weeks. And I said, that's not possible. What is possible is that you can get better at traditional animation. And that message that, all right, you got to learn the basics. You've got to really hone your storytelling skills, your writing skills, your ability to craft dialogue, your ability to create meaningful story that connects with not just your friends, but other people outside of your sphere. I think those are timeless lessons that anybody can learn from. It goes beyond software. It goes beyond any specific techniques that I can teach them.
Just remember all of this when things get really, really hard. This is an exercise that I take myself through. It's an exercise that I take the students in my year-long mastermind program through, where we literally write a letter to ourselves or we paint the picture for where we want to be in a year. I constantly have to go back to it. So I've already written to myself that by the end of this year, while I will have been through the rebranding process, I will have successfully launched a summit. It was an absolute shit show for 6 months. But then things started to settle down. Then I started to find my footing. Then I started to feel confident again. I kind of got through the worst of dealing with my parents' health and everything worked out okay. And it's the dumbest thing. Every time I read it, I feel just a little bit better. It's such a simple exercise, but I literally have that written to myself when I say, it's all going to fall apart. This is going to be a massive disaster. Nobody's going to want to come to this thing. Nobody's going to want to be in any of my courses. Nobody's going to want to hire me for the next job. Oh, no. But future me told me it was going to be okay. So yeah. That's why I wanted you to do this exercise with yourself. Remember the next time it gets really hard and it seems really dark and really uncertain, what 5-year Kalika just said to you.
Important words.
From a very wise lady.
A very wise lady who's pushing her mid-50s and maybe retirement doesn't feel so far away for her anymore.
I bet she doesn't look like she's pushing her mid-50s though. She's got that going for her.
Yeah.
So having said that, I really appreciate you sharing your time, you being open, vulnerable, and honest about all of your struggles. For everybody that's listening, watching right now that is stuck square in the messy middle, is there anything you want to leave us with that we haven't already talked about?
So this is a bit of wisdom that I got from an animation producer. I asked her this very cliche question. I said, if your young daughter decided to become a producer in animation and she was struggling to figure out her footing, what would you tell her? And she said, I would tell her, don't worry, you'll figure it out.
I can't imagine a better place to leave us. Don't worry, we will figure it out. Kalika, for anybody that is interested in learning more about you, connecting with you, dare I say even hiring you for your brilliant motion graphics, animation, branding skills, and otherwise, where can anybody that's here today find you?
If you want to learn more about me, you can go to my website. It's antidotefx.com, antidotefx.com. And there is a project inquiry form there, but there's also a contact listed on the website, and you'll get to learn all about me. We have our training component, we have our community component, and all of those are interesting. But the best part of that website is the case studies, and we have a whole bunch of them down at the bottom. So I hope you'll scroll all the way to the bottom and take a look at those.
Well, you get my wholehearted endorsement, and I'll do my absolute best to make sure that we connect you with all the right people. So once again, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us in this summit.
Thanks, Zach. Appreciate it.